Good evening, everyone. Good to see you all out on another beautiful summer evening. Thanks for coming to the last of our 5-week series on practicing with anger in angry times. So some of you have missed all the others and are here just for the first time, and that's just fine. Each part can stand on its own pretty much, but if you'd like to catch up, the earlier talks are posted on the website. This is the last installment, but no doubt all of us will continue to practice with anger for the rest of our lives, our own and others. So tonight I wanted to spend a little time on an essential practice for our ongoing practicing with anger, and that is forgiveness. Forgiveness is a preliminary practice traditionally done before practicing loving kindness meditation. Some of you may have done that, some of that practice. Metta, loving kindness. Over the last few weeks, we've talked about how rather than suppressing anger, we can transform anger through awareness and insight. Insight into the ultimately insubstantial nature of the beliefs with which we fuel anger. We can see anger as a conditioned and impermanent arising of defensive energy, of natural defensive energy. But unlike animals who can diffuse their aggressive energy very quickly after its arising, we have the mixed blessings of memory and foresight and self-consciousness that really complicate it. So we need to take the backward step and shine the light of awareness on our moment-to-moment experience when anger arises. And that gives us a little space, a little opening in which we can choose to refrain from speaking or acting reactively and doing harm when we're in the grip of anger. So this approach might be called seeing anger with the Dharma eye of wisdom, insight. But we can also see anger from the Dharma eye of compassion as a state of suffering. Because we all know that anger is a state of suffering. It might temporarily seem like a surge of power and control. But the longer we stay in its grip, the more we suffer and make others suffer. So seeing that suffering in our own anger and in the anger of others and responding with kindness and compassion is seeing anger with the eye of the Dharma eye of compassion. And with patience, that was our topic last week, patience. So important when dealing with anger. So I said, some of you may be familiar with what are called the Brahma Viharas, or noble abodes. They're also known as the Four Immeasurables, because they are truly inexhaustible practices. And they are loving kindness, or metta, in the Pali language, ancient Pali language, compassion, karuna, joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha. In each of these practices, when we do them as a meditation practice, we use phrases silently repeated as we sit in meditation. Phrases that direct that quality of loving kindness or compassion to first oneself. This is the traditional sequence. First oneself. Because how can we truly be kind and compassionate to others if we can't be to ourselves? Often that's the hardest practice, isn't it? First ourselves. So may I be happy, may I be free from fear, may my heart be at ease. You can make, may I be safe from harm. There are some traditional phrases that are used, but we can also adapt them in words that, using wording that works for us. So first for oneself, and then to a dear friend, so you visualize someone who is very dear to you, and use those phrases. Sometimes a benefactor is used in the sequence, someone who's, you know, been a benefactor to you. And then a neutral person, which is a very interesting practice. To take a person, you know, you occasionally see at a coffee shop, and you have no positive or negative charge in your feelings about this person, and really visualize them and wish them well. And after you do that for a while, they feel like a friend. And then you move on to a difficult person. And that can be a very, very powerful practice, you know, to take someone who is challenging or even someone who's been harmful in your life and do these practices. We'd have to take another 4 weeks to really, or more, to practice these. But they can be very valuable when dealing with a difficult person in your life, to take up these heart-opening practices. So you might want to explore them further. If you're interested, I would recommend the Vipassana teacher Sharon Salzberg's book, The Art of Loving Kindness, I think it's called. It's still the best. It's been out for a long time now, but it's still the best. When you're carrying resentment and anger, these heart practices are really valuable. And as I said, forgiveness is traditionally practiced first as a preparation. The more I practice with forgiveness, the more I come to feel that it's actually the wellspring from which these other qualities flow, loving kindness, compassion, etc. Because forgiveness is letting go. Forgiveness is shedding our stubborn belief in our separateness from those who harm us. Separateness from ourselves, for that matter. You know, me against the world, us against the world. The practice of forgiveness moistens and aerates that hard-packed soil of our closed, defended heart and makes room for loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity to grow and flower and bear fruit. It's very difficult to practice loving kindness, let alone compassion, if we're holding on tight to harsh, bitter recrimination towards others or towards ourselves. Release is not easy, and yet we long for it. We long to be free from the suffering it causes us, and yet we hang on to our familiar habitual grievances. Now, we could spend a whole day or a whole series of these sessions just on forgiveness, because there's so much there. And a couple of years ago, we did have a full day retreat on forgiveness practice. But this evening, I'd like to just kind of do a digest version and review a little bit what forgiveness is and isn't from the perspective of a Buddhist practice. And then we'll do a little forgiveness meditation. So first let's look at some of the myths about forgiveness that can kind of get in our way. First, forgiveness is not weak or naive or soft. Those who forgive are not wimps. It takes courage and the hard work of self-examination. Next, forgiveness does not justify or condone or excuse harmful actions. It doesn't let the offender off the hook of responsibility. It does not say, or it doesn't minimize or deny harm done. It doesn't say, oh, all right, it's no big deal. It's not a simple quick fix, and it's not done once and for all. Forgiveness is a process that can take years of slowly deepening. It can take a lifetime in some cases. And also, it's not a matter of forgetting. You know, the old cliche, forgive and forget. In forgiveness, you remember what happened, but without the bitterness, without the resentment and pain. And forgiveness may or may not lead to reconciliation or reestablishing a relationship with the person who has hurt us. It actually only takes one person to forgive. It takes two to reconcile. Another myth about forgiveness is that in our closest relationships, there should be no need for apology or forgiveness. Have you ever heard that said? You know, if you really love each other, there's no need to apologize, or there shouldn't be. But in fact, it's often harder to forgive those who are closest to us than to forgive strangers. We feel more deeply betrayed when friends and family betray us or lie to us or abandon us or disappoint us. Yet, forgiveness does not depend on the apology or the remorse of the offender. It's not even primarily something we do for the offender. We do it to free our own hearts. Okay, so if all that is what forgiveness isn't, what is it? What is it in terms of this practice? Well, most simply, it's being able to open your heart to anyone, even those who have done harm. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow once said, if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should see sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. If we really knew. Our hostility would be disarmed. So here's my working definition of forgiveness. It's a process of healing and purifying the heart, of releasing bitterness, pain, and holding. How do we do that? By acknowledging our own pain, feeling it, grieving our losses, and by making a choice about how we want to live with the reality of harm in human life. By seeing deeply into the tangled roots of human greed, hatred, and ignorance, or delusion, the three poisons the Buddha taught: greed, hatred or aversion, and delusion or ignorance. Seeing into the roots, the karmic roots, we open, and in that seeing, we see that the roots of our suffering and the roots of the suffering of those who hurt us are actually intertwined in our humanity. So we open our hearts. We see in ourselves and those who have hurt us the same human yearning to be free from suffering. In a more secular approach to forgiveness, not only an academic, because he's worked all around the world with some very difficult populations on forgiveness, Fred Luskin, who's the director of the Stanford Forgiveness Project, identifies what he calls the components of creating an interpersonal grievance. I think these are really helpful. He says, first component is taking something too personally. Second, blaming the offender for how we feel. And we've talked about this over the past few weeks. And three, creating a story of grievance that reflects helplessness. Those are the three ways we create and contract around grievance. And the corresponding three components of letting go, releasing in forgiveness are: one, viewing the offense less personally, seeing all the other factors, causes and conditions that led to this, and two, taking responsibility for your own emotional experience instead of just blaming the other person, and three, changing the story to reflect a choice to be free of anger, resentment, and bitterness, to grow and to thrive. Because, of course, it makes a big difference what the story is we tell ourselves about our experiences. We tell ourselves, or create what Luskin calls unenforceable rules about the way life should be for us, right? And this echoes what we talked about a few weeks ago. Watch out for the word should. These are some of the rules. My partner has to be faithful. People should not lie to me. Life should be fair. If I work hard and I'm a good person, bad things shouldn't happen to me. Right? People should treat me well and care about me the way I want them to. My past should have been different than it was. My parents should have treated me better. You know, should. But can we make any of those things happen? No, these rules are unenforceable. And yet, we torment ourselves and others in trying to enforce them. And we talked about this in terms of our anger reactions, our defensive reactions. So many of them are based on these shoulds. When we do the practice of forgiveness, our state of open-heartedness will naturally fluctuate. So it's not like flicking a switch and just saying, "I forgive you." We do this practice with as a way of bringing awareness to the state of our heart and releasing just as much as we can in each time we do the practice. At times, we may only be able to open to the distant possibility of forgiveness. So we bring a mindful, non-judgmental awareness to that state. Forgiveness can't be forced, but we can cultivate the ground and nurture the plant, but we cannot make it grow and flower. At its very most basic, forgiveness is the way we bring ourselves back to awareness when we forget to pay attention to our lives in our practice of being awake. We forget all the time, right? We forget to pay attention. So we forget, we remember, we forgive ourselves, and we come back to awareness of breath and body and perceptions, emotions and thoughts. So you can say, instead of forgive and forget, forget and forgive. We forget over and over and over again. And we have to forgive ourselves and renew our intention. So let's take a few minutes and actually do a bit of the traditional practice of forgiveness meditation. Just to give you an idea, don't feel like you have to be really good at it in this short little time. This is just to give you a feeling for how it works. Okay. We begin by asking forgiveness of others for harm that we have done. And to ask forgiveness of others, we first have to be aware that we have caused harm. We have to feel the pain that we have caused others, deliberately or not, from our own greed, aversion, or ignorance, through our thoughts, words, or actions. You might say, well, how can my thoughts hurt anybody? But the Buddha taught, the thought manifests as the word manifests as the deed develops into habit, the habit hardens into character, so watch the thought and its ways with care, and let it spring from love, born out of concern for all beings. So thoughts are key. An awareness of our thoughts. So let's try this practice. Please sit in a comfortable position with your eyes closed. Usually we do Zen practice with our eyes softly half open, but in this case, for this practice, we close our eyes because it can be helpful to actually visualize the people that we are extending these qualities to. Let your breath settle into a relaxed, natural rhythm. And bring your attention for a moment to the area of your heart, your heart center, and just be aware of feelings there. Any feeling of contraction or openness or warmth. As you breathe, just allow a sense of warmth and softening to arise in your heart. And then I'm just going to read some traditional phrases that are used in forgiveness meditation. There are many ways I have hurt others, knowingly or unknowingly, through greed, hatred, or ignorance, through my thoughts, speech, and action. I ask your forgiveness. I open my heart to receive your forgiveness. So just for a few moments, allow those phrases. I ask your forgiveness. I open my heart to receive your forgiveness. Let them rest on the rhythm of your breath. And if a specific scenario or person arises, spend a few moments with visualizing that person. Repeating the phrases. Don't worry if you become distracted or a little agitated, then just come back to sitting quietly with awareness of the breath and body, letting go of the phrases and returning to them when you're ready. I ask your forgiveness. I open my heart to receive your forgiveness. The next step in this practice is to extend forgiveness to those who have harmed us. And there are many ways I have been hurt by others, knowingly or unknowingly, through greed, hatred, or ignorance, through thought, speech, or actions. I offer them forgiveness, or you can say, I offer you forgiveness, imagining a particular person. I open my heart to the possibility of release. So again, allow any specific scenarios or individuals to arise. And just repeating, I offer you forgiveness. I open my heart to the possibility of release. Just noticing if the heart feels closed. No need to judge that. Just soften a little bit as you breathe out, opening just a little bit to the possibility of release. And for now, letting go of that practice and moving on to the next step, which is forgiveness of ourselves, which can be the most challenging. It requires patience and steadiness. There are many ways I have hurt myself and others, knowingly or unknowingly, through greed, hatred, or ignorance, through thoughts, speech, or actions. I offer forgiveness to myself. I open my heart to the possibility of release. And again, noticing what feelings arise, the opening or contraction. Any specific scenarios that arise, just holding them on the breath. I offer forgiveness to myself. I open my heart to the possibility of release. And now just laying that practice down for now. Knowing that these are practices you can come back to over and over and over again. Even just in small increments. Even right in the middle of a busy work day. You can stop with a few breaths. And do these practices. You can do them, I call them mini metta, you know, little moments of loving kindness practice through the day, or street metta on the bus while driving, Or you can take a whole week of a meditation retreat and really concentrate on these practices. So thank you for trying that, even though it's just a little short introduction for those who may be new to it. But this practice of forgiveness opens the heart. It increases our capacity for living in those noble dwellings. That's what Brahma Viharas means, noble dwellings of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And it also increases our capacity to cope with all the many, many ways life does not go the way we want. And that potential for harm that is always present in human life. The practice of forgiveness requires courage and patience. But we're in this for the long haul. And I think that we may find, if we take up the challenge of this difficult practice, we may find, perhaps to our own surprise, that if instead of being filled with resentment, anger and bitterness and wounded pride and stories of grievance, that we fill more and more with gratitude for our lives, just as they are each day, each moment. So that brings us to the end of our series on anger. Lots of grist for practice, I think, for all of us.